Friday, the 21st of March 2014. This morning, like many others, we learned of the passing of resident historian with Glasnevin Cemetery and Museum Shane McTomas. Whilst it is coincidental that the Sideshow's journey returns there today, it still was and will always be an absolute honour that I got to spend time in Shane's company to shake his hand, to smile, to laugh, and also to learn so much from him. We would like to dedicate this show in his memory.
...103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. ...103.2 Dublin City FM. It is The Sod Show for Friday afternoon with Brian Green and Peter Donegan. Today, we're back at Glasnevin Cemetery, where we take things all horticulture. Peter will be talking with Philip Ryan. That's coming up in a moment. First, thanks to our sponsors, greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. Check them out on the internet at greensacks.ie. Check them out in the supermarket where you can pick them up. Over on Facebook this week, not a lot of additions. It was a bank holiday weekend and things are a little quieter at Sideshow HQ. But there is news that the Irish Daily Mail are having a weekend free essential guide to Irish birds. The Essential Guide to Irish Birds magazine. Learn how to identify them and to attract them to your garden. Coming up this weekend. Don't miss it. It is 103.2. It is Dublin City FM and you can contact us at Sideshow on Twitter, The Sideshow on Facebook and info@sideshow.com for the old email way of contacting us. If you like to feature on The Sod Show, if you've got any news for us, do get in touch. As I said, this week's interview, it's going to be spread over 2 weeks. We're talking with Philip Ryan, and he's the top man for horticulture down in Glasnevin at their wonderful cemetery. Let's hear how it all came about. Here's Peter Donegan talking with Philip Ryan.
Sitting right in front of me is one of the, could you call it an advertising campaign? I'm not too sure, but let me give you some of the oddball stats before we kick off. 508 bells and 80 rings are buried here. There are 1 million Dubliners, that's of second name, and 1 Luke Kelly. There are 29 Shakespeares and 1 Brendan Behan. There are 44 heirs and 506 graces buried here. There are 21 money pennies and 119 bonds. And there are 26 brewers, 7 beers and 1 barman buried here. 95 north, 6 south, 4 east and 193 west. And finally, my favourite one, 707 monks, 5 saints and 68 popes. You have really got to come check the place out. In my company this week, for the horticultural leg of what is Glasnevin Cemetery is?
Philip Ryan. I'm the grounds manager for the trust.
Philip, you're the grounds manager for the trust. Just to get this right in my own head, one of the places that you are over is Glasnevin Cemetery.
Yes, I'd be over Glasnevin primarily, and that's where I'm based. But we have 5 cemeteries within the group. That's Dardistown, Parmestown, Newlands Cross and Golden Bridge, which is a very small cemetery, which is pretty much closed. The last burial there was probably about 3 years ago. But primarily I'm here. This is the one that I'm most involved with, even though I oversee all the other cemeteries. This cemetery, I'm going to take it back 20 years ago. I was a student in botanics at the time, which is, as you know, right next door. And I used to walk by the fence, which is exactly where the new link is. And you could look through the bushes and you could see into the cemetery at that time. And all you could see were briars, weeds, nettles, everything. And I'm not exaggerating when I said they were above head height. They were 6-7 feet high. And I remember walking by with a whole load of students and we were looking in and we were laughing and we were kind of saying, and I'd hate to ever work in there. So
can I pause you? Do you have children?
I have children. I have 4 children.
Well, So when mom and well kids are asked in school what dad does for a living, what's the answer? In fact, when you're asked in the pub what you do for a living, what's the answer, and how does that go down?
Well, I realised very, very quickly that when you go into a pub and you work in Glasnevin Cemetery or for a cemetery's group, there is this desire for people to know what goes on. They don't want to go there, but they do want to go there. And given a few drinks, the tongues start to loosen, and eventually somebody will ask me what I do. Now I just say that I'm a horticulturalist. I do gardening and a bit of landscaping, that type of thing. But if I say that I work in Glasnevin Cemetery, I'm the grounds manager, all hell will break loose. And they'll want to know all those questions, all about cremations, all about burials, all about exhumations. And there's just that total and utter interest in it. Whether people like it or not, they have it and they want to know it. And we know it. So that they'll just start asking all the usual questions. But I could be there all night.
In reality, your qualifications are the same as my own. You studied horticulture, I would have done commercial, you would have done amenity. So we're similar, but yet different. Chagas would have been, I gather, the operating body over the botanic gardens at the time, or the qualification givers at the time, if that's fair to say. When you first came here, because you didn't always work here, just to put in context, when you first came here to see the place and you were asked, would you like to take the job, take the project on, what was your reaction, being that you'd seen it as a student?
Well, my initial reaction when I was asked to come in and look at the cemetery, I came in a day, I remember it was one of the few days I had free, and it was lashing out of the heavens, really, really dull. And I drove in the gates. At that stage, you could drive down the grounds, and I drove around the grounds, and I drove down to the part of the cemetery that was in real bad need of repair and restoration. And I looked around and I was really, really shocked. And I got back into the car and I drove back out. And I went home to my wife and I said, look, you know, I don't really think this one's for me. It's awful. It's dull. It's dreary. And I just didn't give it a chance. So the next day I got up and I said to her, I said, I'm going back in. I said, it's nice and sunny. I said, I want to see it. I want to walk the grounds. So I came back in the car and I spent a couple of hours here, walked around what was a nursery, the very start of a nursery. They had 7 tunnels. The nursery was completely empty. There were no plants in it. And I looked at the grounds, completely overgrown, wild. And I really, it just kind of came to me walking around. I just said, this is one hell of a challenge. And I just decided, yeah, I'm going for it. I want to see this place improve. It grows in you. It gets into your blood. And I just wanted to, I wanted that chance to make, I suppose, my own mark on the place. It's a historic site. And I don't think you get very many opportunities in life handed to you like that to refuse it. And I didn't.
For the horticultural students who are listening to this, for those down in Waterford Institute who are listening to this, who are going through college, when I won't say when it seems too good to be true, but when it actually seems that bad, that maybe it's the opportunity that you didn't realise it was. More so, is there a case for anybody who's qualified in horticulture? And we discussed this before we came on air, that for me, I get to say that now, working under my own name, that, you know, darling, honey, wife, Philip Mervyn, I did this garden and I did this. I'm responsible for it. So it's almost the opposite to the, how would you say, it's the opposite feeling maybe to being asked in the pub what you do for a living. It's a very large sense of pride that you get to drive past here with your good lady and say, this, I'm responsible for its, for how good it looks. And again, Mervyn was saying that people are coming in here to take a bit of time out of life to have samage and to pay respects as well. But it looks so damn beautiful. It's a real credit to you.
Thank you. I have to say, getting to the stage we're at now, it's been a huge amount of hard work. How did we start it all? I actually, at the beginning, realised that there was nobody out there to actually tell me how to do this. There's no books. I don't think there's any other cemeteries that have tried to do what we've done. And to take a cemetery from what was a wilderness to what it is today, how do you start something like that? And I was saying to you downstairs that my very first day here many, many years ago, I went walked out of the, what was the nursery, and I decided where would I start, and there was a grave right in front of me on the corner, and I said, I'll start there. And that's how I started. It was that simple. You take one step, but one step to a huge journey. And that was my first step, and I had at that stage, going way back now, we're talking about FOSS, I had 25 FOSS trainees each year. I put them through a City and Guilds horticultural course, and I would lecture to them every morning, and in the afternoon they would work for me. And they were my labour force. So I put them out cleaning headstones, taking ivy off them, spraying, all the things we had to do to try and control this place and get it back into what would be an unmanageable condition. And that was the first step, was to take stock of what we had, get it back to a manageable position, and then start taking it forward. And we've got to the stage today where the finance has been put behind it, the time, the energy, the planning. It's not just me. It's a huge team effort. We have meetings every week. Our CEO, George McCullough, holds steering committee meetings, which is all to do with the restoration and planning what's going to happen, what's going to not just happen today, but I know of certain things like the tower. There are plans afoot to put a new stairs into the tower. Now, people might think that that plan was developed today or yesterday or a couple of months. It wasn't. It was actually conceived 23 years ago.
Just to backtrack, and in case people aren't aware, what happened, the original staircase in the tower, there was one there at one point.
Yeah, originally the original staircase, which I believe was made out of wood, somebody tried to blow up the tower. And they, instead of blowing up the tower, which the walls are probably about 4 or 5 feet thick, they blew up the stairs instead.
So that was how many years ago did they try to blow it up?
Yeah, the early 70s. The rebuilding of that was actually a seed that was planted 23 years ago. And an awful lot of work that happens in the cemetery is planned way, way, way back. And it takes that much time to bring it up to what it is today. The same with the grounds. The grounds, I've been grounds manager 8 years. I've been associated with the cemetery for around 20 odd years. And going way, way back 15, 20 years ago, I started that restoration. I left in between and worked for myself, but I came back to it. I always had this passion in me. It just never left me. I always said to my wife, if there ever was a job that I could go back to in the right position, that would be the one. I never knew it would ever come up. And it did. And when it did, I didn't know. In the beginning, when I came in, I said no. But when this position came up, I grabbed it. I was actually in Celtic Tiger times. I was working for myself. Times were good. And all the other horticulturists thought I was an absolute total lunatic. Why would I give up working for myself in the middle of Celtic Tiger and go and take a full-time job with less pay? But it was just this place. It grows in you. It gets in you. And from a horticultural point of view, looking at what it was, I wanted to enhance the experience that people have here. They come in to bury the dead, yes, to pay the respects, absolutely. That's what it's mainly here for. But it was a Victorian garden cemetery. It was a park in the past. We need to bring that back. We have a massive amount to do here, all relating to this big word nowadays, biodiversity. But it's here. It wasn't here in the past, but it's come back in. We have pheasants, we have foxes, we have squirrels everywhere. We have loads of wildlife. The field fir, which is a bird that comes in and feeds off the berries of the taxus, is here at the moment. You know, there's interesting things happening. And I want to put into plan all sorts of things to bring the wildlife back in here. Plant new trees. Last year I planted, believe it or not, fruit trees into the cemetery. Now I have wild, either an Irish native fruit trees. I've plums, pears, apples, all growing down the grounds. Nobody knows they're there. So what happens to those? Well, the bees can have them. People can come in the future and pick apples when they're ripe. I don't mind what happens. But what I'm trying to do is enhance the experience for people. When they come into the cemetery, it's not just about graves and death. It's about beautiful architecture. It's about wildlife. There's lichens. I have a guy who rings here, and if we're cleaning headstones, he gets very upset because we're actually upsetting the lichens and lichens, or whatever you call them, on the headstones. But people go to that extent. It's important to them. So every aspect of the cemetery has to be taken on board. So when I'm developing the grounds, I've one very simple rule, and it's basically KISS. And that's keep it stupid, simple, but classical. And if I keep to those rules, it's quite easy to do it. Everything I put into the cemetery, I must think of cost. I must think of my maintenance. How am I going to maintain that in the future? The cost implications into the future. So we have to design it in such a way to bring it back to a modern day Victorian cemetery. We can never go back to what the Victorians had. They had 20, 30, 40 gardeners. I don't. I run here in the winter on 4 full-time staff. I have 140 acres. Some people would look and say, you're an absolute lunatic. How can you do it? I do it by the use of proper herbicides, pesticides, proper machinery. It's all about time management. If I pick the right machine that takes a man, say, 2 hours to cut an area. If I pick the wrong machine, it could take him 4 hours to cut the same area. So it's a matter of picking your products, picking the plants I put in here. They must be fairly maintenance-free plants. This year I want to develop an area down the grounds where I want to plant a whole load of headstones. I want to plant agapanthus, the blue agapanthus. Because in between headstones, I have some gaps that may be a foot or so wide. That's a maintenance problem to me. I have to send guys out to strim that. So I'm thinking is take out the soil in between, put in blue agapanthus, put it into a whole area. So when you come in here in July, August, you will just see this sea of blue just peeping out through all the headstones. And I think that'll give another aspect for people to come in to see. It's not just about headstones. It's a beautiful landscape. And it has to be walked through. It has to be enjoyed, savoured. Autumn here is absolutely spectacular. There's 600 or 700 trees in sight. Huge amount of them are evergreen, but then a huge amount of deciduous. And this year, they were spectacular. And if people don't come in and have a look, they just don't know what they're missing.
Brian, back in the studio, we're going to pause for a little bit of a song of the week. I've kind of that talk of autumn and we're spring, and I don't know. I had Mom's and the Papa's on cassette, and I need to go out and buy it on CD, and there's something in there that you might have in your library or not, but give me something, one of them.
Sometimes I think Peter Donegan should have grown up on a hippie reservation. The music choices he has are just so hippie. Mamas and papas, your wish is my command, Peter. All the leaves are brown. The sky is grey.
Dublin City FM. I'm in a cemetery. You wouldn't believe it. In my company is Philip, the head don over these beautiful grounds. And as I look out the window, there are some absolute fantabulous trees indeed. One of the questions that comes up to me always, I do know the answer for this, is the planting of the Taxus baccata or the yew tree. The yew would be, I suppose, famed for its poisonous berries. Do you want to explain this one?
If my memory serves me rightly, they were planted in cemeteries because the yew seed was poisonous and the cattle wouldn't eat it. It kept the farmers, yeah. But nowadays, it became popular because the trees can live 300, 400, 500 years of age. I mean, we have ones here on site that are well over 200 years, I'd say. The longevity and the association of that with death and the continuation of life. So they associate the taxes with basically the longevity. I don't know if I'm getting that right now or not.
If you want to look it up online when you get home, if you're driving, it's Taxus, TAXUSBACATA, Taxus baccata. And again, it is the berries, I think, that are noted. It is the berries that are noted as poisonous. You have some absolute whoppers of individual specimens of trees as well. Do you know a couple of those offhand?
I just want to go back to the Taxus just for a second. The berries are poisonous. The field fir does eat the berries. But the important thing is that they'll pass the seed through their intestine. And when it comes out, of course, the acids in the stomach have acted a little bit and stratified them. And the seeds actually do grow quite readily around the place. There's an avenue here we call the Chapel Walk, which is the Taxus baccata fastigiata. They all originate from Fermanagh, from one plant in Fermanagh. and they were propagated from that. So it's a very interesting history to do with all the taxes. We have two types here. We've got the taxes peccata fastidiata, that's the Irish ewe. And we've got the taxes peccata, which is the English ewe, which is more of a shaggy head. And there's the two types here. How they were planted through the cemetery, I'm not really quite sure. I've never really worked out any plan. I've seen plans for the cemetery. It seems to be quite a haphazard type of planting that they did. They just picked squares and planted them with all sorts of variety of trees. And we have a huge amount of beech, lime, four or five sequoias, one of them which is just outside the window here. That one outside the window has actually now been a noted tree by the Tree Council of Ireland, because one of the branches, if you stand behind it, has the exact same shape as the shape of the new museum roof. Now, I don't know if the architect, Andrew Weishart, ever planned that. If he did, he was a genius, or he got some inspiration from that branch, and the branch is still there. And every storm, I'm just praying to God that the branch never breaks. But it is absolutely unbelievable how that branch matches the arc of the roof.
How far can you go as a horticulturist, designer, horticulturalist, note Jane Paris, how far can you, sense of humour, can you go as a horticulturist in a cemetery, bearing in mind that you have a Victorian design to, you might say, pay respect to or pay homage to? I mean, are there certain plants that you logically cannot use? Are there certain parts of the... I mean, you know, you can't put in some kind of madcap Chelsea Flower Show bloom display in the middle of here. It would be deemed as disrespectful. You'd be heckled. You might be applauded, but you would also be heckled probably in greater numbers. What was Victorian... What is Victorian design, and why did they do it around cemeteries? What was the reasoning behind it?
Well, the Victorian design originally was very, very ornate, a huge amount of, as I say, trees, bushes, all planted together for colour. They used a lot of box hedging, that type of thing, toperies, all very tightly clipped. And they wanted to just produce a very beautiful, very ornate, very fanciful looking cemetery for people to walk through. Nowadays, it's just not possible. Every plant that we put in here has to be well thought about. I do use a lot of box, topreed. There's a lot of them around graves. I use a lot of taxus because, again, they're slow growing, very, very easy to keep. I've got to pick plants that are not going to take a lot of time to look after. As I mentioned earlier, like Agapanthus, if I put a field of Agapanthus into the cemetery, I know I can leave that pretty well free to do what it wants to do for a number of years. After a number of years, I go back in with my guys and we lift the Agapanthus, divide them. But that's not wasting them. I'll take the Agapanthus I divide and move them on to another section. So I'm going to increase. Another area I'm going to put is Rudbeckia. Fantastic flower at the end of the season, you know, in the autumn. And you'll just get this sea of yellow orange running through a section of the graveyard. So I want people to come around corners and kind of go, wow, look at that. It's just a huge surprise. Like I said, the fruit trees, it's a surprise. So how do you develop a cemetery this old that was a Victorian cemetery to the modern age? There's no books. There's nobody to tell me to do it. It's what comes out of my head. It's what I would spend a lot of time looking on online and researching. And I could be flicking through a book and I just see something and I just go, that's an interesting one. I wonder how I can develop that. A lot of them I throw away as bad ideas, but I will research them and see, can they work? And they do work. I had 3 years ago, now it didn't last due to the amount of weak, residual weed killer that's still in the ground here. But I did plant a wildflower meadow. And it was hugely popular. A massive amount of art students came in. Huge amount of photography was taken of it. And it was beautiful. It lasted
for a season, but how come there was, or am I okay to ask this question, was there so much residual herbicide in the ground that made it not last?
Well, over the years, I'm going back 20, 25 years ago, the weed killers that were allowed on the market, and they're not anymore, they're all being removed from by EU regulation. Castoron G, Simazine, they were all around. Now they're known as to be toxic and they're gone, but they used to put it on the grounds here. Castoron G would last up to 5 years. But it was a real case in those days. I think there's kind of, they put the measure in and put another one for good luck to make sure that it did did the job. It did the job. The place was very, very bad, and they had to get it back into control. But the byproduct of that was the residual effect was to stay in the ground. And it could take up to 5 or 6 years for it to leave the ground. So although I can plant, like I planted the area with the lawn seed, and mixed into that we put in the wildflower seed. The wildflower seed just happened to be that little bit more susceptible to the residual effects still in the ground. And there are areas of the cemetery that still very, very little weed grows. It's coming back, it's getting leached out, the rain is getting rid of it, and natural biological bacteria will be working away and all that. We have, you know, out the grounds, we have a huge amount of acreage which is under burial, which has all individual graves. And although it's the responsibility of each grave owner as such to look after their grave, and we ask them to come in and look after their own graves, but an awful lot of families have died out. So there's nobody there to look after the graves. So it falls on us to keep the cemetery.
Fascinating stuff there. We must leave it, but we will pick up again next week here on The Sod Show, next Friday, 3 p.m. Thanks to Philip Bryan, and for Peter Donegan's roving microphone skills. Katrina on the blogs, thanks to her. To greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden, thank you for sponsoring us. For everyone back at base at Dublin City FM, thanks for listening. Do take care. Talk to you next week. Bye bye.